Good evening. Well, I tell you, I'm pretty excited tonight. I hope you all are too. I think that it's a wonderful thing to be able to come out and worship God. I hope tonight as we study together, this can benefit each and every one of you. You know, I think one of the most important things for me when we gather together is to give an opportunity for those in the audience to consider what changes they need to make in their life. And as we gather together, it's a perfect opportunity to consider your life. If you would, go to Hebrews chapter 3. And that's where we'll begin. Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13 is a very appropriate verse, not only for the Hebrews to which it was written, but certainly for us today. The Hebrews at this time were embracing some of their Jewish customs. They were trying to bring in things that they once did as part of their church worship. And in verse 13 it says, "But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." And like I said, I think that was a very appropriate verse, appropriate commandment given to the Hebrew Christians considering their condition. And it's a very appropriate verse for us to consider today. And if you would, I'd like for us to, as we study this verse tonight, I'd like for us to take each word and look at it more closely. So what we're going to do is basically just really, really study this verse in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13. First of all, let's look at the word exhort. Hebrews chapter 3 verse 13, it says, "But exhort one another daily." This idea of exhort means to advise, to warn, to urge forward, to encourage, to aid. And friends, it's not a suggestion given to us. It's a commandment that God has given us to exhort one another. It's not something that we can choose to do. It's a commandment just as serious as any other commandment we're given in the Bible, that we are to exhort one another. We are to urge forward. We have a duty towards one another. What better way to do that than when we gather together? In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25, it says, "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." When we assemble ourselves together, it's an opportunity to urge one another forward, to encourage one another, to aid one another. And again, that is a commandment that we're given. Let's go to James chapter 5 and verse 16. Right along with that idea that we're to exhort one another, that we're to urge one another forward, James chapter 5 and verse 16 tells us, "Confess your faults one to another and pray one for another that you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." Confess our faults one another. That implies that we have to get to know one another. We must be willing to do this. We must be willing to break down that barrier between one another to get rid of pride, vanity, or whatever. We need to feel comfortable with our brethren, comfortable enough with one another that I can go to someone if something that's bothering me, if I have something that I'm trying to work on in my life, that I can go to someone, one of my brethren, and say, "I need this help. I need help in this way. I need your exhortation. I need you to aid me, to encourage me." So we need to be willing to confess our faults, to let our brother know what we're struggling with. You know, that's a very humbling thing to do. I don't know that we do that often enough. I can't remember I know that it's happened, but I can't remember the last time someone came to me and confessed to me something that they're having trouble with, or that I've done that to someone. I know that it's happened, but it doesn't happen enough. We don't confess our faults. And perhaps we're nearly perfect people, but I doubt it, that we don't have the faults that we need to confess. But that's something that we need to do. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 11. I tell you, I think it's remarkable when we go through the Bible and find out how much time Christians spent together and how dependent they were on one another. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 11, it says, "Wherefore comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also you do." We are to comfort together. That means that we need to spend time together. And we're going to look at that more and more as we get through the verse. But this idea of comfort, that's where we are to get comfort. We are to get comfort from one another. So you're starting to see that dependency upon one another that the Bible expects, that God expects of us. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14. "Now we exhort you, brethren, warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, be patient towards all men." This exhortation that's expected out of every single one of us is to warn them that are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, and of course, support the weak. Support the spiritually weak. That's the duty. That's the commandment. And friends, that's the privilege we have as Christians, to exhort one another in these areas. What about the idea of one another? In Galatians chapter 3 and verse 26, do you realize how special you are? Maybe some people may not need as much convincing that they're special people. But do you realize the person sitting next to you, the person sitting across the auditorium, is just as special? Because the Bible in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 26 describes us as all children of God by faith in Jesus Christ. Why should we exhort one another? Friends, we exhort one another because we're all special. We're all precious in the sight of God. Because we're all the children of God. In Acts chapter 2 and verse 44, "And all that believed were together and had all things in common." The Bible describes that the saints were together. And this makes me understand, it makes me realize that they were able to get to understand one another, able to get to know one another. And it goes back to that point of confessing our faults to one another. The more time we spend together, the better we get to know one another, the more comfortable we'll feel in expressing our faults one to another. It's important for us to understand one another. In that same book, let's go to chapter 4 and verse 32. How close were these people? It's remarkable. And it's sad. Sometimes I feel like I don't live up to this. But in Acts chapter 4 and verse 32 it says, "And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and of one soul. Neither said any of them that aught of things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common." The Bible says that they were of one heart and one soul. They had concern one for another. And it showed. It's obvious their attitude towards one another. Is this the attitude that we have towards one another? Are we of one heart and one soul? And whatever is mine is not mine only, but it belongs to my brethren. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. You know, this is one thing that I'm trying to teach my children, to think of one another. Put the other in front of your own self. But that's an attitude that we all have to have, that we need to esteem others better than ourselves. When is the last time that we put someone else's needs and concerns and feelings above our own? But in that effort to exhort one another, this is something that we need to strive for. This idea of daily, you know, it's we're all busy. We all have jobs, we all have obligations, we all have things that we have to do on a daily basis. But I know that if I ask every one of you tonight, what's the most important thing in your life? I know that you're not going to say anything but God. You're going to tell anybody that will listen, anybody that asks the question, what's the most important thing in your life? You're going to say God. Obedience to God. Making God happy. But do our actions show it? The commandment to us is to exhort one another daily. In Acts chapter 2 and verse 46, of course, this is talking about right when the church was first established and the Christians were not really in their own hometown, but they were all in Jerusalem and in verse 46, and they continuing daily with one accord in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart. They continued daily, the Bible says, with one accord. Of course, that means with one mission. They had a mission in mind. And you know, although many had obligations, they're no different than us. These early Christians, New Testament Christians that we can read about, they're not a unique people, unique from you and I. They all had jobs, they all had obligations, they all had other concerns, just like you and I, responsibilities, but they still made time to gather together frequently. It may be impossible, and I know that we don't gather daily like it's expressed here in Acts chapter 2, but certainly we can gather frequently, as often as it is needed, as often as we can. But the point is that they gather together frequently. Let's go to Acts chapter 16. And so were the churches established in faith and increased in number daily. You know, that's a subtle verse. Let's think about that. The church increased in number daily. What's necessary for the church to increase daily? The only conclusion you can bring from that is that they were about the business of the Lord on a daily basis. They weren't just Sunday morning Christians, Sunday evening Christians, or just even Wednesday evening Christians, but they were Christians every day of their life. That's the only way that the church increased in number daily, is because people were about the Lord's work every day of their life. That's important for us to understand. Verse 10. And the brethren immediately sent away Paul and Silas by night unto Berea, who coming thither went unto the synagogue of the Jews. These were more noble than those at Thessalonica, and that they received the word with all readiness of mind, and searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so. What a remarkable group of Christians here. It says that they received the word with all readiness of mind, and they searched the scriptures daily. It doesn't say, but I think it might be safe to say that a lot of times when they searched the Scriptures, they were probably together searching the Scriptures. We know that I know the best beneficial way to study the Bible is with a group of Christians and giving feedback, making points. But that's one of the best ways to study the Bible. Although we're not certain, but I'm sure there were many occasions when they searched the Scriptures daily that they were gathered together. What about this idea of today? Again, back in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13, but exhort one another daily while it is called today. While we have today. What's so important about today? Well, tomorrow is not ours. And we must make our best improvements today. And that's what I encourage everyone here in this auditorium tonight, myself. What improvements do you need to make in your life? Today is the day that you need to make those improvements. Tomorrow may never come. So the commandment given to us in Hebrews is exhort one another daily while it's called today. It shows us the urgency of today. In James chapter 4 and verse 14. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanish away. Whether we realize it or not, whether we slow down in our lives to consider it or not, that is exactly the way our life is. And anybody that has children, you know, it seems just like literally yesterday they weren't walking, and today they are. And when you're 50, you'll feel the same way. And when you're 60, when you think back on some joyous moment, some joyous time in your life, you'll think that it was 30 years ago, but you'll feel like it was just yesterday. That is what our life is. It's but a vapor that appeareth for a short time. Lest any of you be hardened. This hardened of the heart is a terrible thing. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2. Speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron. What happens when something is seared with a hot iron? It's like that cowboy roundup, and when they gather all the cows together and they brand them with a hot iron, that it becomes unsensitive. It's no longer sensitive. It's tough skin. And that's what could happen to our hearts, our conscience, when we allow ourselves to live in sin. We no longer have a soft, sensitive conscience towards that. You know, the best way I can illustrate this, I think, is someone that works with their hands every day, that's a farmer, and that always has their hands on a shovel or a hoe. You know, if I were to work all day right now with a shovel, I would feel it in the morning. My hands are not calloused and hardened like a farmer that's been doing it all of his life. My hands are sensitive. But someone that has engaged in that type of work for a long time, their hands are no longer sensitive. They can do it without thinking. They can pick that shovel up and work for 8 hours and their hands won't feel it. That's the same thing with our conscience. If we live in sin, we will no longer be sensitive to that sin. We will become used to it. What about the deceitfulness? The idea of deceitfulness, being deceived, it promises much but brings nothing. Deceit misleads. Something is misrepresented. Sin. Tonight I would like for us, there's many things that we could talk about tonight as far as sin, but one thing that I want to focus on tonight is lying. I think of all the sins that we could talk about, I think that lying is perhaps, in my mind, one of the most deceiving sins there is. Although that they are all deceiving. I won't call the name, but I have a child that I was talking to him about lying. And I said, you know, I was telling him, I said, you know, it's terrible to lie. God hates a liar. And you know, your mom and dad may not know that you're lying, but God does. And it's funny, but it's not. But they said, well, God's not going to tell. Do we feel that way ourselves with when it comes to lying? See, that's how deceitful lying is. We feel like the only person that may know that we're lying is God, but God's not going to say anything. God's not going to say anything to the people that maybe in our minds that really matter the most. You know, that child would really hate for the mom and dad to find out that they're lying, but it doesn't seem like they mind so much, you know. But as grown-ups, do we feel that way when it comes to lying? Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 4. Why is it so important for us not to lie? Because let me tell you, brethren, it's the type of God we serve. It's because of who God is that lying is such a terrible sin. He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all His ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity. Just and right is He. The Bible describes God as a God of truth. The exact opposite of lying. Let's go to Titus chapter 1. Titus 1 and verse 2. In hope of eternal life, which God that cannot lie promised before the world began. That is the God that we serve, friends. And that is why we should hate lying, because we serve a God of truth, a God that cannot lie. And that should be our attitude about lying. I cannot lie. It should be so foreign from us that we realize that it's hardly possible for us to lie. But I think many times that's the deceitfulness of that sin. It deceives us. And we think that it's not that terrible. We can think of many things that are much worse than lying. I mean, what's worse than lying? Well, murder's worse than lying. Adultery's worse than lying. But is it really? Let's go to Revelations chapter 21. Verse 8, but the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and adulterers and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. This is hell, friends. And look at the company that liars have. There's not two classes of sin. But sometimes I think we in our lives, in the way we act, we think that lying is not nearly as bad as all these others. But look at its company. It's right along with unbelieving, idolaters, murderers. The deceitfulness of sin. The deceitfulness of lying. This letter was written to Hebrew Christians that had a problem with sin. And it was very appropriate for them to hear this. And I believe it's very appropriate for us to hear this. Because sin is deceitful. Let's not be deceived. If we can help you in any way this evening, I encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing.